Adam Morrison here. When it comes to top-tier contracting, my go-to choice is McGilvery Environmental. They're not just any contractor, they're the best in Spokane and North Idaho. With years of experience, they handle it all. New construction, meticulous repairs, and asphalt overlays. From start to finish, they ensure your project is completed with the highest quality end results. And here's the scoop for this year. McGilvery Environmental has expanded its services to include asphalt paving. That means top-notch commercial parking lots, residential driveways, and road construction. So, ready to kickstart your project? Reach out to Kip at McGilvery Environmental by calling 208-556-6384 for your free estimate. Don't forget to mention my name, Adam from the Perimeter, and experience the difference that McGilvery Environmental brings to the table. Again, that's 208-556-6384, McGilvery Environmental. My number one choice for all my contracting needs. The Perimeter would like to thank our sponsor, HDG Architecture. HDG is a Spokane-based architectural firm whose aesthetic can be described as an understatement of badassery, an idea that sets the standard for their approach to every client and every project decision. The world is full of poorly designed spaces, and HDG wants to change that. Check out some of their award-winning work at studiohdg.com. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 12 of The Perimeter, sponsored by McGilvery Environmental. Two wins this week. Feels good saying that.
Yeah.
Not trying to be too sarcastic, but we've had the last three episodes, we had to talk about a loss, which is never fun because I don't want to be too critical and I don't want to sound like a jerk, but sometimes you have to go that route. But a really good start to West Coast Conference play. I think the number was 45... straight WCC openers wins. That's like to 1995 or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, that's really a wild number if you think about, like, just all the better teams in the past, and then obviously Gonzaga wasn't as dominant in the earlier years, that they win every single time on the opener.
That is...
It was a crazy stat.
That, like, is a crazy stat.
It doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't make... I put it as like a poll thing on our stories, and because you and Huddy were talking about it, and I was like, that is freaking crazy. Like, no,
makes
no
sense.
I don't think any... I'd have to go through the history of like all sports, but like that has to be like the longest, like, streak
conference.
Ever.
Yeah. No, I when I heard that, I'm always just like, how would, you know, somebody hasn't dumbed into a win, or, you know, knock on wood, somebody's injured, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, like, there's so many variables. But, you know, we opened with Pepperdine, kind of a little bit different in the Spokane Veterans Memorial Arena, which has actually gotten... Have you been to a concert there lately? You know, just like upstairs and like the food and all that stuff. It actually looks better than it used to be. It used to be a dump.
They've actually made
it a little bit better.
I've been to a couple. Yeah, it's a much better venue than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, when you play in that arena, it's not a great shooting arena. And I always take that stuff with a grain of salt, but I obviously played it in high school and in college. I shot well there, but I get... And I'm just saying that, but I get, like, the backdrop's weird. There's gaps on each corner. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's not the best shooting arena. It's not the worst, but it's not, you know, it's made for hockey and, you know, concerts. So having the opener there was a little bit nerve-wracking, especially coming off a loss to San Diego State, going with Pepperdine. Pepperdine's an interesting club. They were 7-8, but they have, like... Usually always like two or three legitimate pro prospects, not just NBA guys, but guys that could play overseas. And that's a real thing, you know, like actually have good careers overseas. The Porter kid, his brother is Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah.
And then I think his sisters are like played at USC. Like, his whole family's played Division I basketball. It's crazy. There's like six of them. Huddy always talks about it like on the broadcast. So he was, he's definitely a challenging, cover. And then the Ajayi kid out of, I think it was Tacoma, but he was going to Pierce Community College, just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
He was averaging like 17, 18 points a game. So going into this was a little bit, we always beat Pepperdine, but if you look up the last, you know, their home games. Then when we play them on the road, I know this was a technically a home game. They usually play us a little bit tougher.
At
their place. But my point is, like, when you play them, you're like, you look up and you're like, man, we're controlling everything. Oh, we're only up 8 with 6 minutes to go. Like, that's how it is down there. And then we win by 17. And then it looks like you just walked through it.
Right.
So going into that game was a little bit nerve-wracking. Obviously, one, coming off a loss. Two, playing in a different venue that a lot of these guys haven't shot in. And we've talked about at length about the shooting woes that we've had this year. And I'm tired of covering it, honestly. And people are probably tired of me talking about it. So that was a factor in my mind going into it. It's like, okay, hopefully we can make some jumpers. I mean, not trying to be funny, but like, this is a new arena. You know, this is a talented team that can score. They don't play very good defense. Millette, again, for them is fantastic, as well as a come off screen, 1,000-point scorer, can score, can get hot, is what I'm trying to say. So, like, he's a dangerous cover. But I really liked our energy to start the game, especially defensively. And then obviously we started making shots there. Went 8 of 19 from 3. Nolan Hickman, 4 of 5. Ryan Nemhard, 2 of 3. I'm going to talk about them too here in a second. But made field goals, 3-point field goals, which really obviously spaced the floor. Graham EK was fantastic, 20 points, 7 rebounds, 8 of 10 in only 21 minutes. He's been super efficient. I think the last 4 games he's had 3 of 20 and then 1 20 plus and then 1 at 19. So basically 4 games of 20.
Yeah.
I think after this is my best guess, and I'm pretty sure I'm right. After the UConn game, if you were at the UConn game or watched it, obviously I'm right next to the bench, just where I had our commentating station. So I'm like 5 feet from the bench, which I love. That's easier because I can tell the story a little bit better too. Mm-hmm. Me and Huddy, it's just better for our, you know, conveying what's going on to the audience. Fuey was on Graham, like, not in a like, come on, champ, like on him. And they kind of chirped back and forth. And remember, Graham didn't play very good and only played like 12, 13 minutes. I think there was a come to Jesus moment for both of them. Like, hey, you transferred here. You're playing all right, but we need a physical presence and we need an emotional presence. And if you've noticed after that game, he's been the guy that's like yelling at refs. I mean this in a good way, but like kind of like posturing. He did that in San Diego State. Like they were being physical. He was the one that kind of like mixed it up. He's got a technical with hitting a guy above the head. Not condoning it, but I'm like, hey man, I want my big guy like kind of like setting the tone. And I think he's relishing in that role, and he understood the assignment. Like, hey, you know, you transferred from Wyoming, Mountain West Player of the Year, sat out last year. This is a big year for you, right? If you want to go where you want to go, and you got to start playing with a fire and emotion. And he's done exactly that. And I think against Pepperdine, he really showed that because he got low block touches. And I've talked about that at length. Like, when he gets his catches at 15 to 12 feet, I bet you his percentages are cut in half. But when he gets them 8 to 12 feet or in, he's like a 60% score, you know, or field goal percentage. And he did that against Pepperdine, was really efficient, obviously, like I said, 8 to 10. So, you know, I'll talk about the San Diego game, obviously, next. But he's done an excellent job of kind of being that emotional leader for us and the physical leader I think we needed. And I'm pretty sure that was probably a talk with the staff. In a good way, but like sometimes you gotta be real with kids, and they gotta take it too. It's like, yeah, man, I transferred from a pretty good situation, and for me, I'm coming here. Like, I need to get it in gear. Not that he was playing bad, but I need to like show emotion, and we need that as a group. So I was really impressed with that in the Pepperdine game. Like I said, obviously only played 21 minutes, but 20 points, super efficient. I love the shooting as a group. Braden Huff was fantastic, 11 points, 5 of 7. I mentioned Nolan Hickman, 5 of 7, 4 of 5, 14 points, 3 assists, only 1 turnover. Nemhard, 3 of 7, 2 of 3 of downtown, though, which was fantastic. Anton's been great all year. It's 15.6 rebounds, 6 of 12. He's just been kind of a quiet you know, he showed that last year, but he's just quiet and gets his numbers and does everything right. You know what I mean? Like, he's just a great addition to, he's the guy that, you know, I've had this question posed to me a few times, like, what player could play on every Gonzaga era or whatever, you know, like all the, 'cause there's so many good groups. He's one of them that, he wouldn't be the superstar in any of the groups, but he could fit in every single one of them.
Totally, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, defend, check. Defend every spot, check. Rebound, check. Shoot it good enough, check. Score it good enough, check. You know what I mean? Like, if you just go down the list, you're like, man, he could fit into every single team. Not every guy could say that.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on some players, but, like, you know, Jeremy Pargo was great, but could he fit on some of the teams where, because he couldn't shoot it as good when he was at Gonzaga? Probably not, but he was good when he could come off pick and roll and dunk on your face. But, like, but we weren't running that type of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit different now. You know, so obviously Anton's been great. I'm happy for his success. Hopefully it continues, has a great senior season. It was best for him to come back. I'm glad he did the combine thing, but, like, just went down there and got the right advice and internalized. I think he legitimately has a chance to be an NBA player. And I know people look at the numbers and they don't jump off the paper at you, but, like, if you can defend and you can be a knockdown shooter, like, you can find a place in that league to do that. 'Cause you got to be able to guard multiple spots. And then if you can be where you can be, like, a comparable 40% three-point shooter, and you probably take three a night, maybe four, and make two of them, you know what I'm saying? I know that's over 40, but you get what I'm saying? Like, go 2 for 4 and then play defense. Like, you can get on a roster and survive. And I think he has that type of game. Obviously, he'd have to tighten things up. Everybody does when you make the next level. You tighten your body up and, you know, your handle's got to get all that stuff. But I think he has a legitimate chance. I'm glad he has is having a great season, because when he first started, those injuries really impacted, like, how he looked on the floor. You know, remember he had that weird shoulder deal, kept slipping out. So I think people were kind of puzzled, but it's like, well, if you're trying to, like, chug and be physical and you always think your shoulder's going to slip out of line, like, it's hard to play, like, normal, even though they're like, you're cleared. You know what I'm saying? Like, you really got to trust. It's like a knee.
You know what I mean? I've never been injured, like, where I had to, like,
trust
an injury or trust it. So I imagine it is hard, especially at an elite level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you can't, like, you know, pussyfoot around or whatever the term is and kind of go half speed, because you'll get exposed. And so, again, really impressed with our debut. It was the 25th anniversary of the 99 team. That was cool. They did something at halftime.
Yeah.
I'm going to make one complaint, and I think it's valid, and this is not a knock on our video team or whatever, but, like, as they're walking on the court, like, play the Gus Johnson Calvary tip with the audio and let everybody in the stands go fucking crazy. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, they just walked on the court and it was, like, silent. And then they just announced their names. Like, dude, that as they're walking, like, Calvary, the slipper still. They're like, play that. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Totally,
Because, like, I had some people text me, and this is not, you know, they're just like, who are those people? Like, they're newer fans. But, like, well, that's the 99 team. Like, oh, cool, you know? But, like, remind everybody. Like, that was an easy layup.
That is so true.
It's like a 30-second clip, and it's an all-time classic because it's Gus Johnson. He's, like, one of the best of all time. Yeah. But, like, the slipper still fits. Like, everybody had been hyped. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So,
like, but it was cool that they, you know, obviously honored him as alumni weekend, but it was the 25th year, and it's cool they did that thing with Jeremy Eaton's son, who he passed away, I think it was a couple of years ago, or at least last year. I can't remember. A big integral part of that team. So I was happy for those guys. We got to interview a couple. Axel Dench was cool from Australia. I haven't talked to him in forever. And then Matt Zitangelo came on, and it's just nice to see the old guys, 'cause I looked up to them. I remember, like, it being in high school and seeing that team go on the run, and you're like, who the hell? 'Cause I was a ball boy, but then I was a ball boy, like, I think 5th and 6th grade. And then I didn't do it 7th, 8th, 9th, you know, I'm like, all right, not driving you down, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you can only do so much. And then it was just like, all of a sudden you're like, holy crap. And but, like, I remember we used to go to games because I was kind of getting recruited, and This one you had to go to the Martin Center, and then they would do their pregame like shoot around. They would walk to the field house. So like if you're out in the foyer, they'd all walk by you in their uniforms and stuff. And it was like the Gladiators. It was like just a cool, like, oh yeah, there's Mark Spink. Like right. There's Santangelo. You know what I mean? You'd be like, yeah, you know, and it was kind of a different feel because like there's no way anymore that you would ever get that type of access. But it was new Gonzaga good. So like people are just fans are just literally standing right there and you get to walk through and like that was no cell phone era. So then there was no like, hey, can you take a quick picture? Like that wouldn't fly today, obviously. But it was neat to, you know, because I played against some of those guys in theory, like when they come back in the summers, you know what I mean? Right. So like you develop a relationship then too as well. But I also said it on air. I know they got to go to the next game, San Diego. But I was like, isn't it weird that you guys like walk out and you have to do it in the arena? Like
in front of like no student section again.
No student section, yeah. And I was kind of being a hater. And I don't think like Santangelo and Axel Dench likes that question because I put him on the spot. And like Huddy was looking at me sideways like, why would you say that? I'm like, I don't know. Like this is weird that we're doing this ceremony at the arena. But
yeah.
Whatever, man. Whatever. I don't know anything. Who cares? So yeah. All in all, good start.
Totally.
Like I mentioned, the 8-19 from downtown it was a great precursor to what was coming Saturday. But this team has enough talent to shoot it well. Guys get their reps. We don't have any people that are, you know, like that just simply can't shoot that are playing.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the case, but it's rare in Gonzaga uniforms now. I mean, we don't have any people that can't shoot the ball on the perimeter. So it's nice for it to turn a corner now. It's easy for somebody to be like, well, look at the competition. I'm like, that's true. It's a fair. But also, like, we were getting wide open shots against better teams, too, and they're just not making them. So you need to start making them against whoever you're playing against, and then the basket gets bigger. So it was fantastic, and I was really impressed. And good way to start the West Coast Conference.
Absolutely. I was going to say, like, when Nimhard, he made his first three in the end of the first half, and he visibly breathed, like, a sigh of relief. Yep. Like, you saw it, like,
point.
He was, like, you could just tell, like, he knows that he's, like, shooting poorly this year. Yeah. And I feel like that probably helped out a lot and to make the first one of the game. And, but yeah, it was a fun atmosphere. Like, I do agree. The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, Greens. How's everything going today?
Hey, Robert. We're good. Just checking in on that car loan we applied for.
No worries. Let me pull that up. Yep. Looks like you're approved and all set.
Hey, that's great news.
So, you headed over to the dealership now?
Yep. Just gotta make one stop first.
And we got a great rate, too.
It was a fun atmosphere. Like I do agree. Like it also was weird that there was no student section. Like I don't, and it wasn't at the kennel. So like it's, the atmosphere was just different, but they had beer at least.
Yeah.
No, lubrication a little bit.
I thought the crowd was good.
Yeah.
It was obviously electric the year before versus Kentucky, but doing a game in the arena makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, they'll probably have to try to schedule a different opponent, but I think it just makes sense for the community. And then also, like, you got to be honest, like, a lot of times these neutral site games are there for a reason because you don't have to do you can split the revenue on certain things. If you do a home and home, I usually you can't do that for some reason. That's the understanding I've always got from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a lot of times these teams will be like, yeah, we'll do neutrals, and then either you get the splits or we all take all of them in each one, but, you know, obviously having more fans and then you can sell at, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think the revenue splits get higher. So that's why you see a lot of neutral site games.
Yeah.
And you can argue, is it good or bad? I think it's somewhat good, but then sometimes you're just like, let's play at home, man. Like, I'm tired of going to these big arenas that are to get like three quarters filled.
Mm-hmm.
And like we draw good.
Mm-hmm.
But like if you watch college basketball on TV, sometimes you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like they're playing in Madison Square and there's 5,000 people there. Like that's not a good look.
Yeah, it's not a good, like, you know what I mean? Like I mentioned, like the week or two before where they were, Boise WSU was there, they didn't have bleachers behind the backboards, which was really weird. It was just like a void.
Oh, they didn't have seats behind the
back? No, it was bizarre.
Weird.
And then they closed off like part of the top, like most of the top, but like parts of it were open, and they couldn't fill that for WSU and Boise State, and there's so much alumni here for that.
Yeah.
I think the only college team that could probably fill up Spokane is Gonzaga.
Yeah,
easy.
Yeah. No, so. I understand that, but like, you know, if you're a fan that's going to the game, like you want to see somebody else besides Pepperdine. Nothing against them, but
after the game, article came out saying that everyone really liked the reaction to it and how it went, and they are talking about making this an annual thing. But I would imagine if they made it an annual thing, it would have to be a non-conference.
Yeah. Like it should. Like maybe you could go. I like playing at Heck Ed, but you could say, all right, UW, let's do Climate Pledge and then Spokane Arena.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just go, okay, we'll probably fill up both.
Yeah.
And it'll benefit you guys as well, but let's play a Climate Pledge and then play here. I think that would make sense too.
Mm-hmm.
And both schools would you know, gather a lot of money real
for sure.
quick.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you play over there, and I've seen this, like when we play Portland and sometimes definitely Pepperdine, like they get a little bit testy because we all the tickets being bought are Gonzaga fans.
Right.
But then also you're like, the counter to that is like, well, you don't sell out anyway, so who cares who buys the tickets? It's like when people boycott like Nike, I'm burning your stuff. They're like, you already bought it.
Right.
Nobody gets a shit.
No kidding. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The boycotts are what they are. You know, they work both ways, but it's still funny when you already bought the product. And like, they don't give a shit. They throw it in their trash. They don't care.
For sure. Yeah.
It's like, okay. But yeah. Overall, good start. Going into the San Diego game felt really good. They were actually better than I thought coming into it. They were 10-6 coming into the game. 9 of those wins were at home, so God bless them. And Steve Lavin is one of my all-time favorite, like, just college basketball dudes because he's always just cool and Southern California guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the slick back hair and just a cool dude, you know, just a cool older guy. You know what I mean? Like, obviously had some good stops, was good at UCLA, St. John's, I think, for a bit. They were solid. And then he's been in the booth forever. And did I tell that? I told that Steve Lavin story.
No,
I
don't.
Time.
I
think I anyway, so the last time when I was a freshman, we're playing St. Joe's.
Okay.
In the Madison Square. First game, career, nervous, whatever. And he comes to our shoot around, which all analysts do. Like he was calling the game that night, I think.
Mm.
And they come to your games. And so they kind of get a feel of what are you running tonight? It's just what you do if you're calling a game. And we do half quarters during shoot around. You shoot one on each side. And if you make two, you call it daily double. And then you keep track throughout the year. But it's like, it's a fun thing to do, but also like it sounds funny, but like you never know when you're going to take a half quarter to win a game. Like you at least need to have a feel. And so like, it's kind of a practice, like at least get it on the backboard.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's like you got to shoot it. Like I prefer like banking mine, you know what I'm saying? But like you've seen people win games like that.
Totally.
I've seen a girl last year at the state championship for 4A caught one from half court and launched it and won the first round game. And you know what I'm saying? Like it happens. Like I used to do it with my AU team, like just half quarters, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're shooting one, and I make one, and I'm, you know, I'm a young freshman, like, yeah, just celebrating, just joking around. It's kind of a joke around time.
Uh-huh.
And he comes over, and he goes, so what do you get for that? And I'm like, what? And he's like, you don't get anything? I'm like, no. And he goes, well, when I was coaching at UCLA, they'd give you $500. And that was before like NIL, and he got in trouble for allegations.
That's funny.
It's awesome. Like one of the best lines. And he like winked at me and like was kind of serious, but laughing. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
So I was just like, yeah, Steve Lavin.
I don't think he's ever told that story. No.
Yeah. It was pretty funny. And so he's always been in my good he didn't give me $500, and there's statute and there's statute limitations with him. You know, I'm not trying to throw him under the bus, but it was a classic line at the time because he was like out of coaching, mm-hmm. kind of got in the, you know, that's when you probably had to throw kids money a little bit at UCLA.
Totally.
Everybody was doing it. So I'm not, but it was just like the perfect line. So, you know, he gets the San Diego job and he's trying to turn the program around. So like I said, he schedules 9 home games. Good on you, man. They mm-hmm. go, they're 10-6. They have some good players. Yeah. The Deuce Turner kid was good. He's averaging like 17, 18 or something like that coming into the game. A team that can really, they scored it at a high clip, but with only like 2 or 3 guys. So it wasn't like a, you know, they're going to space you out and kind of scare you. But mm-hmm. He's been playing like 10 or 12. So, you know, going in felt good, obviously heavily favored. But again, with this crew this year, you know, if the ball's not going in from the outside, we don't look very good sometimes. Mm-hmm. So you're always kind of like, well, it might be an interesting one tonight. And it's more fun to comment that. I've said that a million times on all my episodes. Like, I like the years when we're not winning by 35. It is fun, but it also is, I mean, I fall asleep on the mic.
Totally.
And people, I get it. People at home turn the channel. I would too. I used to all the time. Like, yeah. All right, this is dumb. Like, Law and Order, what's going on? You know, just whatever. Yeah, you know, it's just like,
it really is like a hard time to watch when you are up by that much. I will say though, you and Huddy make it fun to listen to on the radio because there is sometimes just nothing to talk about. And you guys, I love getting a little insight of like your guys's like your conversations, because I feel like you get a little bit more a fly on the wall when the game is just like a blowout.
We just try to talk like we and you know, like we're just having a beer at a bar. Right. I mean, honestly, because it is bad. And then I don't know, we try to like continue things throughout the season.
Totally.
So you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. So like there's a few layers of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's fun that way. But sometimes it's like, man, I wish there was a running clock in this crap, man. It's just bad. You know, it's just bad.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a good thing to have this problem, I guess.
Totally.
But yeah, to going back to the game, starting out again, no students. It's like, man, how long do these breaks are now, man?
That's a long time.
It is a long time. I think we missed four or five games. Which is a real thing. Obviously, it's cool that other people get to go to the game and mm-hmm. they do feel it. And the crowd's not, you know, not terrible, but it's not as hyped as students, and that you're never going to get that. So it's not like a legit criticism. It's just the reality.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, like always when I do my keys to the game, I always create energy.
Right.
You know, you have to create your own energy because it's not coming from the students. But I loved our start. Graham again was fantastic. 19 points, 8 of 12, 6 rebounds or 8 rebounds total.
Mm-hmm.
Really got deep post touches. He's doing a good job of countering as well, instead of just going to a left hand like turnaround where he's really good at it, but he's getting paint touches where he's getting like 4-foot bankers.
Mm.
He countered to one to his right hand, you know, so he showed that instead of always going middle or, you know, right shoulder, left hand, jump hook. You know, and he's shown that he could be a, you know, WCC MVP type player, and we needed low post scoring. Not that he wasn't doing it earlier, but I'm just saying his attitude and his emotional fortitude or whatever, like his oomph, mm-hmm. it looks better.
Yeah.
And that usually, you know, when you're projecting that and you really truly are confident basketball gods, things will come your way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ball will bounce your way. You'll get bigger game. It's just, basketball karma rule. Like if you are confident and you assert your will, normally things go your way. And I think he's starting to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to really help us if he can continue to score like that, but it just gives us foul pressure, excuse me. And then the way we've shot the last two games, the double team stuff, oops, dropped my pen, will be not as effective if we can score.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Well, I was going to say, like, so last year, like, Drew Timmy was always down low on the post, and, like, that opened up scoring out on the outside, correct? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think what I'm trying to understand is, like, when he gets it up higher, like, it's just like that, those percentages go down and he just can't make mid-range shots as well as he can underneath the hoop, right?
Yeah.
And, like, what pushes, like, him out more? Like, I know it's the defense, but, like, you just got to assert your dominance. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, if you're a good coach and a good staff and you scout, you probably go, okay, you know, and there's, I think Divx used to do it, but I'm sure there's another company and they probably make them millions of dollars. Same with for football, where they probably, you give them your film and then they chart everything for you, like, you know, AI or whatever, and show, okay, your percentages from 8 to 12 and then 12 to 18, things of that nature. So then, as an opposing coach, I'm telling all my bigs, you got to try to stand him up early is the term. And so he can't get deep post touches. Now, what happens is, if you're smart, every time a guy's chugging you early, you'll show your hands and show it to the ref and then kind of bump in and smart. That creates foul pressure. So that it's not as easy as it seems, because freedom of movement, and it's the right thing in basketball, is an emphasis. It should be in the high school level as well, that if you're cutting somewhere, you're allowed to move with some resistance, but I can't just push you off your line every single time.
Right.
Because that was 20 years ago, and it's still in college basketball, but, like, they changed in the NBA, and it's been filtering down. It's so much better game because it's supposed to be free-flowing movement, not just I can push you and then make you stand out on the three-point line. That's not the game. So my point is, if you're defending him, you have to try to get him to get his catches at 12, 15 feet.
Yeah.
Even if he does his bounce, because then if he does his bounce down stuff, which he's good at, that gives you time to do your double team stuff or funnel him to his right hand. But if he's at 8 feet, he doesn't have to take a bounce down and he can turn and go without a dribble, or it's one dribble, he's already to a shot. So then your double's got to come early. That's when you cut on the weak side, you fill. So low paint touches for him are super important.
Yeah.
And it's not like he can't make those, but again, like, his percentages are way better when it's 8 feet and in. And that's everybody. That's not like a big take, but, like, some guys just aren't as good, you know, out on the perimeter. And he's, not that he can't do it, but he's way better inside. He's got a nice touch.
And when the big's, like, further out, that pushes the rest of the team out, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And that spacing too. You're exactly right. I mean, just having that body out at that that spot is different. We used to do a lot of let a guy front you high and then we flash and do high low. We do a little bit now, but it wasn't as prevalent when we had, like, Shimmy and Wilch and Sabonis, and then even, like, remember Rui and BC would do that. We just don't have that type of lineup as much anymore. We don't emphasize it. I'm sure if we had those type of bigs, we would. So, like, sometimes you invite it, like, go ahead, deny me out here, and then you know, head turn, legs, it's called a leg whip, flash, boom, layup, and then you get out of it. It's called a front, right?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
So I was really impressed again with his game. Nembhard was fantastic, 6 of 10, 4 of 5 from three. So he was 6 of 8 on the weekend, which is great, obviously, for percentage, but for him, for confidence wise, behind the arc is absolutely fantastic. He slowed down and he shot it with confidence. He didn't, I think the biggest thing for me when I see him shooting threes is just being on balance. Like, sometimes he's taken some that earlier this year where he's kind of leaning or it's rushed. He took ones where his, you know, his feet set, shoulder width apart, like all the fundamental stuff, held his follow through. But, like, sometimes you have to, like, go back to the basics and really, like, will him in. That's another basketball term. And he did that. It was 4 or 5, like I mentioned. So it was a great shooting weekend for him. 18 points. And then Nolan was fantastic. 6 of 13, 3 of 8 from downtown, which is fine percentage. 17 points. So our backcourt really did a good job of scoring the basketball and, you know, doing the things that they need to do for us to be successful. Huge number for us. And it's kind of been a weird one this year. 27 assists, only 9 turnovers. Now, the turnovers haven't, they've been an issue in the second half, and I covered that probably like three episodes ago, because Mikkelsen brought it up in one of our post-game interviews, and I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't even see that. That's obviously he knows, but you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, yeah, the second half turnovers are the ones that are killing you. But our assist numbers have been kind of down compared to last year. We haven't had like a big 20 assist plus game, you know what I mean? And that was nice to see. Not that the ball has been sticky, but it means that obviously guys were making shots and then it was just pinging all around the, you know, all around the place. And so I was really excited to see that. Obviously Ben Gregg with his career high off the bench, 22 points, 8 of 15, 2 of 6 from downtown, 6 rebounds, or excuse me, 7 rebounds. Fantastic. 4 steals. We had 14 that game, dude. That's a crazy number to even think about.
Yeah, that is
14
crazy.
Steals. You know what I mean? It was, but his energy has been fantastic the last month or so. He's always been a good energy guy, but he's starting to score the basketball, put together high level games. You know, I think he's in the more trusted area of the third big before Braden. Braden's been good. What did he do that game? 4 or 5, 9 points. All right, he played all right. 5 rebounds. But I think just Ben's energy and all those things, the 3-point shooting ability, is going to give him more opportunity to play more minutes. And it was one of those games where he played 25 minutes. Obviously, it was a blowout, but if it was closer, he would have played more. You know what I'm saying? Like, those minutes would remain the same. Like, Fuey gives you that opportunity when you come off the bench and you get rolling. Like, he'll play you more. You know what I mean? It's, you got to be productive.
Right.
It's a hard role to play if you're not, don't have that mindset that you have to be like completely downhill at all times because your minutes are short. But if you can get rolling, like, you'll stay in the game, and then you're kind of an X factor. And, you know, however good you play is just, you know, gravy on top or whatever. So I was really impressed with him, obviously. Really impressed with how we shot the basketball, 56%, 39 to 69, and then 10 of 23, 43.5%. So 18, what's 23 plus 19, 42, 52?
Sorry, I'm like doing the math on top of my head.
I can't, or we were 8 of 19 plus 20, 19 plus 23.
Yeah, it's like
42, right?
42, yeah.
So 18 of 42, it's like 40-some percent. So a good shooting weekend. And I've talked about that before, that we don't have to be elite, but we just got to get the good at three-point shooting. We weren't good before. Now, two games doesn't solve anything, but you had to get something going. You have to start somewhere.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
So I think we're on the right track. Really excited. You know, how this team looks, and you know, right now we're 23 in the AP, 21 in the coaches, and then 45 in the net. So we jumped up a little bit in the net. We're going to talk about the net ranking here shortly with the rest of the WCC, how that looks going, the rest of the year. Obviously there's that Kentucky game, but what we can expect as a fan base, you know, kind of behind the curtain on the numbers and what the NCAA tournament committee looks for in teams. So we've moved up, and again, Coach Few does an excellent job of reminding people all the time, and I think some people roll their eyes at it, but he's exactly right. Like, we like winning West Coast Conference championships. Winning your league is a big deal. Don't take it for granted. You know, and some people are like, the West Coast Conference sucks. Like, well, it's been a 2 or 3 bid league for about 5 years, so it's not that bad, right? It's not. And now I get it. It's not the Power Five and people, but like, if you looked in the backside of like the Pac-12 for the last 5 years, it's been really bad. Like, the back end of it,
yeah, it's
like
awful.
So like, when people are like, well, you got to play Pacific. It's like, well, Cal sucks.
Yeah.
For years, you know what I mean? Like, been in the 300s for net. So like, what does that mean? It's the same thing. We're playing one of the bad teams or whatever, like net ranking wise. So it's not our fault. And, but it is fair to say, like, with BYU leaving, that the league is not as strong. Obviously St. Mary's is a good club. San Francisco is having a good season this year. But it's one of those where, if we handle business and play like we've just showed, you know, we could go 14-2, 15-1, 16-0 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's a legit possibility. Now, Santa Clara on the road coming up on Thursday is going to be an interesting one. They're 103 in the net, so okay, I guess. If you're close to 100 and down, it's considered, you know, decent.
Mm-hmm.
I think their students will be back. I hope they are, because they have one of the best student sections. They call them the Rough Riders or something.
I think it's a pretty small gym, too.
It's a tiny gym.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's a cool, small one that was built the right way. You know, it feels like you're sunken down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really small.
Yeah.
And then the student section probably only comes to that game in the St. Mary's one.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a funny thing. I don't know if they do it anymore. It's just dumb culture thing now that you can't do anything that's funny. But like, they used to have a curtain, and then every time you shot free throws, like, they would open the curtain and be a guy like in a Speedo, like, yeah, dancing funny. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But like, probably somebody's like, that's inappropriate. I'm like, come on, man. Like, we're just kids having fun.
That is fun.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's just kids having fun. And then they usually do a good job with the chants, and then, like, you know, they're, mm-hmm, pretty dialed in on what's going on. They always do a weird chant, like Gonzaga's like a safe school, because apparently Santa Clara is one of the hardest ones to get into. So they always make fun of
That's funny.
Yeah, they make fun of the Gonzaga kids that it's like the easier one to get into. And I'm always like, oh, wow, we're getting into the real, real nitty gritty here. Like, if you got into any of these Jesuit schools, you're probably a smart human being, right?
It's, yeah.
Just on grades or whatever, SATs and stuff. But that should be a good game. It'll be interesting to see how we play on the road.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't win at Washington. That was a true road game.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a big test for us. And like I said, they get a pretty good fan base, and they usually play us pretty tough at home. And then Herb Sindick does a good job of finding like transfer portal guys.
Mm.
They're the school, those type of schools. Like, I think St. Mary's could get into this classification. Santa Clara, I think San Diego can do it. Like, you could probably do pretty well and improve your club every year through the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean is, like, all right, you can find a kid that's, you know, maybe at the bottom end of a Power 5 team that's not playing a lot but was talented in high school and just hasn't got an opportunity.
Right.
Come to campus, and then you just go, like, look how sunny and nice it is. You know what I'm, mm-hmm, saying? Like, those type of schools can, like, easily, I think, recruit those type of kids. Be like, hey, man, the last 2 years you want to play, like, in sunshine, and, you know, when you're walking around campus, there's beautiful people walking around.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's, mm-hmm, a real thing. And so I think those schools have that opportunity, and Santa Clara's done that. He did it with that Pazinski kid or whatever his name,
yeah,
is.
Mm-hmm.
He's literally playing, like, 25 minutes a night for the Warriors now.
Yeah,
and he was good last year. Like, I, yeah, really liked his game. I was like, oh, who the heck is this? He played 5 minutes a game at Illinois the year before. That's crazy how fit matters. Like, mm-hmm, just people that are listening, like, happens in football and happens in basketball all the time. Like, fit, style is a real thing. He literally couldn't get on the court for Illinois, who was good, but not like world beaters. And it's, mm-hmm, not like they had McDonald's All-Americans in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Santa Clara, becomes all WCC. In literally the next year, so in 2 years, he goes from, like, that kid sucks, he's on the end of the bench,
yeah,
to he's, like, playing heavy minutes for the Golden State Warriors.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, that, like, it's just fit.
That's a great recruiting tool, too. Like, if you can have a player do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And then, like I said, like, you come into a recruiting visit and, you know, you were somewhere else, and it's like, Santa Clara's campus is unbelievable.
I got to imagine it's probably a little bit better than Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's just like a beautiful campus.
Yeah.
And like I said, like, you know, beautiful people. And, mm-hmm, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, but
it's
totally.
Just like, it's just a real thing. And you're just like, oh my God. And so, yeah, Santa Clara's had a good year. They're 10-6, 103 in the net.
The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, it's Olive. I just got my first ICCU debit card. Now I just need some money in my account. If only there was someone who could transfer in some allowance.
Wow.
6, 103 in the net. I mentioned earlier, we're talking about the net rankings for WCC. So Gonzaga's number one, 45. San Francisco right behind us at 46. St. Mary's at 50. So then this is where it gets gross. LMU, 211. San Diego, 224. Pepperdine, 242. Portland, 280. Pacific, 353. So to give a little bit of context, if people listen don't understand, the net ranking is like your schedule, you know, strength of schedule, who you beat, who other teams beat, that you common opponents, and then like winning margin, and then like there's even like weird defensive ratings and offensive ratings that are considered in some of the KenPom stuff as well. So like I remember there was a deal like 5 or 6 years ago, Few was telling me just randomly, I didn't even ask him about it, but he was talking about in all these blowouts when he put in, you know, like the walk-ons, just like their rebounding margin would be like 18 and then would shrink to like 12. And he was getting upset about it because like there's a weird defensive rating goes into, it's not going to make your thing drop a ton, but it's also like, hey, you know, teams that get number one seeds or number two seeds are usually in this graph and there's data. And so like, it's one of those where like, do you want to leave the, you know, the walk-ons out there, but you're up 35 and then maybe get a guy hurt for not. But then also you're like still coaching when those kids are in, you're like, come on, like box out, you know, because usually other teams leave their guys in, you know, until the last 2 minutes if they're getting blown out. So like, you know, you can, you know, your starters, if they had a bad game, can maybe feel a little bit better about, you know what I'm saying? It's a building. So getting back to the net, like LMU, San Diego, Pepperdine, Portland, Pacific, unless something drastically changed, those wins, if we get them, quote unquote, are not going to like help us in the net ranking in theory. So it's kind of like a throwback year for the WCC. Now I just referenced like 10 years ago, it's a too big league, but with BYU leaving it, it's kind of, you know, gone back to, you know, where in my era, we used to play a crazy non-conference because we kind of had to. And then, you know, our RPI would be good. It was RPI back then. And then it would just slowly, even if you're winning, just slowly hit the tank. I know that's happened on the girls' side a ton. Like the girls' side has had to play crazy non-conferences and then they get into the league and, you know, they'll be in the 30s or whatever. And then it'll just, they'll still win and just go. And then they're in the 50s and then they get screwed, get an 8 seed. You know what I mean? It's like, man, they want to get off that 8-9 line so you don't have to play a 1.
Right.
You know what I mean? You want to get to that 7 and below so you can have a chance to get out of that first weekend. Not to say they couldn't beat a 1, you know what I'm saying? But you have a better chance to get off that 8-9 line, but it's the formula of the league. It's not their fault. So it's interesting how different the league is going to look this year with those bottom, was that five, six teams that are not very good.
Yeah.
It's gonna, ranking wise.
I mean, obviously they're going to be, I don't want to count my chickens before the hatch, but I feel like they're wins. But
yeah,
I mean, at the end of the season, like outside of us, Gonzaga losing in the tournament, like, do you think St. Mary's or San Francisco could be at large bid?
That's a really good question. I think,
like, I guess it depends on their, I mean, they would probably have to beat us.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they, if you're them, because San Francisco's 11-4 right now, 46, like I mentioned, in the net, 50 for St. Mary's in the net, 10-6. They'd have to have some signature wins, and those would only be Gonzaga. And then they got to hope that we continue to play well. So I guess what I'm getting to is, you know, obviously we got to take care of business and we want to win league. And if you win the league tournament, obviously you're not automatic, but that's a long way to go.
Yeah.
A lot of episodes.
There's a lot.
But it's not where, like, the years past where San Francisco and St. Mary's were like in the mid 30s. And then you had BYU that was probably in the mid 30s. Yeah. So like if you got those three wins, like they really could, you could put them on a resume and be like, hey, that's a quad one win. You know, so like that counts. So when we get to that game with Kentucky in February, it's gonna be an important one.
Totally.
It's gonna be a tall task, obviously, going to Rupp, and we'll dive into that one big time. But a little bit of a down year, if you're being honest, with the, you know, the data from the West Coast Conference, but we'll see how it goes. And
yeah, there's a lot to tell. I was just looking at the schedules and I was like, well, maybe, you know, San Francisco is a lot better this year. And then I just looked at their last game. They went into overtime against Pacific.
Yeah.
And Pacific is
353.
And that's literally like almost the last team on the net rankings. Yeah. So like,
well, the league is always like that. Yeah, though. It is. So weird. Like BYU could never beat Pepperdine.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, that's true.
Just literally couldn't beat them. But then, like, you know, they were always a tough out and then they would blow out St. Mary's. You know what I'm saying? It's just always the league. You know, we would jump out to leads and then they would just, at the bottom, they would just beat the crap out of each other. Yeah. And it was just always like.
Totally.
It's so, a lot of it is obviously matchups and styles, but yeah, it's just a random, like the league is just so wacky sometimes. It just doesn't make sense. Like LMU almost got St. Mary's, I think the other night, or San Francisco. It was like a 1-point game with 3 minutes to go. You know, just like,
yeah,
the hell's going on here? But it's just, it's a wacky league sometimes. And, but yeah, good start for us, 2-0. Mm-hmm. You know,
is this our one bye week?
No, there's two.
There's two.
So we have this one on Saturday. So no game, obviously Saturday. So we play the one game against Santa Clara, then come back, and then there's another one that you get 2 weeks off or two slots off.
Okay.
And the other one's the Kentucky.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is. That's, and they did that to allow people to schedule another one. So Fuey took that one, is doing the Kentucky one.
So we lost BYU and so everyone got in.
Everybody got, yeah, and went back to even number or whatever.
Yeah.
I just don't get the travel still. It doesn't make sense to me. We used to do travel partners. I know this is not riveting stuff, but like you play LMU Pepperdine and then you play, it was Santa Clara, St. Mary's, because they're in the same area.
Yeah.
And then you'd play San Diego, usually it was your off one, or you did that with St. Mary. You know what I mean? Like, but you did one. So, like, you would go to one spot for 4 days. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I don't understand, like, why they'd want teams to go one place, stay the night, pay for a flight, commercial or not, and then have to come back. And then it's like adding an extra two flights per trip. And that costs money, right?
It does,
and obviously, so like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, it makes sense to go to Santa Clara, then go to San Francisco.
Yeah,
go to
exactly. Yeah. We would go Santa Clara, San Francisco, then St. Mary's, San Diego, or whatever, or you know. But you just stay in the Bay Area the whole time.
Yeah,
and then you go LMU Pepperdine. You'd stay at the one hotel.
Yeah,
you play LMU, and then you take PCH for the next game. You take a bus and then drive back, and then fly out the next day. It just was so much better. Playing wise, and then obviously commentating, you just got to be in one place for 4 days. Was nice.
That is nice, yeah.
But you know, overall, good start to the weekend or to the conference. You know, really excited about the 3-point shooting. I know that's been a big topic, and I'm not going to, like, if we have a bad one again, it's not going to be the end of the world. But we're trending in the right direction, and guys are playing with confidence. The energy was fantastic against Pepperdine. Set the tone. And then it's, you know, like I said, it's a lot easier when the ball's going through the rim. Everybody starts feeling better about themselves. So overall, I think we're headed in the right direction. Sky's not falling anymore. You know,
Totally.
9-4, people are losing their minds. And I understand it to a certain degree, but also it's like, hey, this is a new crew. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer for people to, you know, find their roles and all those things. And then, you know, guys get more comfortable. Nembhard, great weekend. Hopefully continues creep up that 3-point percentage, but also like just his pace was better. That makes sense. Like he's got to push the ball what he's been doing. But sometimes it's like, you know, the 4 out of 5 times take it, but the 5th swing it or something, you know what I'm saying? And it's not a knock. He plays fast and he plays super downhill, has been passing the ball fantastically. Sometimes it's like, I probably should have not. It's a reverse dribble crossover and throw it to the next guy. You know what I mean? You can't always break down the defense and have success. But again, it was nice to see him make shots. Nolan Hickman getting back into that groove as well, making threes. And it's going to be a huge deal for us, you know, just overall schematically.
And winning and consistency is really going to help this team come March. So,
yeah.
That's always kind of been Gonzaga. Always have a couple of tough games in the beginning of the season and then get into WCC and start winning.
Well, and if we're being completely honest, like losing to Purdue and UConn is not like a bad thing.
Right.
I think, especially the Purdue game, we had a chance to win that, you know, or extend that lead in the first half. Mm. And then we just literally had that 0 for 16 stretch from three.
Mm-hmm.
I think UConn just outmatched us. I don't think we had a chance in that game. And that's not a knock, but like just looking at their personnel when we got in that game, it's like, oh, I think Purdue, we could have got.
Yeah.
But UConn, after like the first 10 minutes, was like, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just long, athletic, big. It's just like, this team's pretty good. So, you know, again, excited for the rest of WCC play. Santa Clara is going to be a fun environment. Hopefully Graham EK can continue to play well. It's another road game test for us. Obviously, we didn't pass the first one against UW. Like I said, I hope their students are there. It's more fun that way. And hopefully we continue to win and continue to, you know, improve and, you know, watch this team grow a little bit and, you know, get into their roles a little bit more. And it was nice having some blowouts too, so we didn't have to look at, you know, Hickman and Nembhard playing 40 straight minutes, you know, like that's a nice thing as well. As, you know, Nembhard played 34 and then Hickman 31 against San Diego and then 32 and 31 respectively in the Pepperdine game. So, you know, I think they're much more productive when they're in the 33 to 35 range. And I know that sounds kind of funny, but I think extra 5 minutes of rest is a real thing, especially when you're playing defense. You know what I'm saying? Like I played 38 my junior year, 39, sometimes 40, but I didn't play as like solid a defense. Yeah. I know that sounds funny, but like I took plays off, not like just letting guys score, but like I saved steps and all right, I'm not going to go over, I'm not going to fight over the top of this screen. I'm just going to go under. You know what I mean? If the guy hits a jumper, good job. You know what I mean? But like you have to save steps if you're going on the other end of the floor.
And they both play so downhill and they're just very, yeah, I imagine like having a 5 minute, a little 5 minute break a couple times a game really helps out.
Yeah. Like a two minute or each half. That's all you need. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously that's four, but two and change. And then it allows June and Dusty, I think, to play a little bit. And then, you know, or those minutes go to Ben Gregg.
Yeah.
You know, or Braden. But Ben Gregg probably right now is the front runner to gobble up some of those extra runs, go from 14 to 18 to 20 consistently just because he's playing so well and with so much energy. But yeah, it was cool for him to have that career high. And, you know, he's always doing all this stuff. And flexing and stuff. He's a nice kid too. I like Ben, but it's like, hey, good job, Ben.
Yeah.
But yeah, what do we got next week? So we're going to have that break and then we'll break down the next two games in WCC and get everybody going for, what's going to continue. And
when you guys talk on the radio at Pepperdine against Pepperdine, I'm excited to hear about, your, little train trip.
Oh yeah. That was actually a good recommendation because it's better than fighting traffic.
Right.
That drive can suck. If anybody's ever done LA to San Diego, it can be bad on I think it's the 405.
405, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're just flipping a coin or you have to leave like a 11:30 and then you got to pray to God there's no construction or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, the train, that would be fine. I haven't taken an Amtrak in forever.
I've never done it. So.
You never done it?
I want to.
It's kind of like your civil duty as an American. You're like, take public transportation every once in a while.
Yeah.
I wish it was better. I wish we, you know, not to get into political rant, but like Japan and all these other countries have like the light rails that are free energy.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why we don't have it here.
No kidding.
What I'm saying? It's just you know, nice it'd be to have that option, like a bullet train that can go 150 miles an hour or whatever, like safe, like they have in Germany and all across Europe.
Yeah.
Airline tickets would go down dramatically.
Dramatically.
Because you would have that option to be like, hey, I can get to Seattle in 6 hours
or
four in a train.
Yeah.
Instead of paying $250 for a flight, I pay for $100. You know what I mean? Like I'd do that sometimes. Like, why not?
I would absolutely,
like just like driving, but you don't have to drive at the same, you know, I'm talking about the same amount of time.
Yeah.
You can zone out like heck yeah. But that's another deal. Like
totally.
Yeah,
but
we're not Fox or MSNBC, so we're not even gonna try. But yeah, anyway. Thank you to our sponsors, McGilvery Environmental, Idaho Central Credit Union, and HDG Architecture. Thanks for listening. Join us next time.